Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 117 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my cohort journalist, Ben Baumhoffer.
No one's ever called me a journalist before. I need to look up that definition.
I mean, like, all we've been doing the last several episodes is covering the news, right?
Like, that's true. I feel like I really need to get a fedora that says press on it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, seriously. Come on, Wizards.
If I was still going to BlizzCon and got in as press, I would, going forward, I would get a fedora and put a big press thing on it.
The press hat? Yeah.
I don't know why I never did that the one time that I got a press badge.
I know, right?
Oh, like, man.
It just feels right. So we don't have as much news to cover as the last few. We are out of the coverage of classes because they've all been done. But there are some cool new tidbits that have come out in the last week, especially with Gen Con going on that just wrapped up as well. So we've got some fun tidbits. One or two things to talk about. And then we're going to talk about running chase scenes as well, which are one of my absolute favorite things to do.
And I'm really looking forward to talking about that because I've never really done one except for on a pirate ship. And you know all about that.
Yeah. So I'm excited. So let's jump in real fast. First off, I know we were talking about this last episode, but we've actually got some clarification on backwards compatibility now, which is really good because I know we were really kind of wondering how all this stuff was going to work. So Jeremy Crawford, the lead rules designer, sat down with comicbook.com and they talked about what backwards compatible actually means. So essentially it boils down to the classes, subclasses, feats, species, backgrounds, and all the rest you have in the new player's handbook, you can use with any similar elements that appear in other books as long as it's not the same thing. So basically, if a subclass appears in the 2024 rules and you're making a 2024 character, you can't use the 2014 version of that subclass.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose you could, but they are basically saying that if there's the exact same thing in 2024 and 2014, the 2024 overrides, right?
Yeah, this is going to be one of those instances where you French fried when you should have pizza. You don't want
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah. Same with feats, same with species, and any other element that basically, as soon as it appears in the new form, their guidance is the new form always replaces the old form, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
However, players will still have access to all the subclasses that don't appear in the 2024 player's handbook, which is of course quite a few of them.
Yes.
So including subclasses in the original player's handbook, because there is some that don't appear because they've actually normalized and given each class four subclasses. Whereas in the original player's handbook, some classes had more subclasses than others.
Yeah.
So basically, if something doesn't appear in the 2024 player's handbook, you're welcome to pair it with a thing that does. The great example of this is if you're playing a 2024 wizard and you want to use the necromancer subclass from 2014, you're welcome to do so. And again, that's true of anything, not just 2014, you know, Xanathars, Tasha's. If it's a sweet subclass, species, or other character element that doesn't appear in 2024, you can use that with the new 2024 as well. The handbook basically has specific guidance on how to incorporate species, you know, formerly called races, and backgrounds from older books, in part because the shift in how ability score increases are incorporated based on player choice. And then as for the 2024 classes, they do feature different level progressions than 2014. However, he noted that the new class rules are written to allow for the use of older subclasses with different class progressions. So let's say you pick an older subclass that maybe had a different level progression. The new subclass ability rules make it clear that you get all the features from any earlier levels. So the Wizard's new level 3 subclass ability would specify that players can add the features from the Necromancer subclass that would have activated at level 2 if players opted to use the Necromancer subclass.
Which,
so basically, yeah, there's guidance on how to slightly adjust older subclasses to fit within the new level framework.
Yeah. And overall, that's not really that big of a difference as well. I mean, if going from like level two to level three, that's not bad, especially considering the base of the wizard has changed to take that into consideration, which is something that I really like. Plus, one of the big things that I like about this is that it does finally sync up all players, because we've always had, you know, different characters. Like, I think the rogue is one of them where they get different subclass features, like a level early or something like that. I know that's like warlock and cleric, you know, they choose what they want from first level, but now, you know, you're doing it at third. And I like that this gives everybody kind of a sense to get a feel of the character if they're starting at level one, to kind of know what they like and which path they really want to go on, versus, hey, I'm a level one cleric, I've never played this class before, I'm going to choose the war domain. And then, you know, four levels into it, you're like, I really don't like this. I'm not using any of my features at all. You know, it gives you a chance to kind of know your playstyle for that character first. Unless you're like me, who generally starts games at level three, and then it doesn't matter anyway. Which, I, from what I hear, a lot of people do that just because it's like, you get the real meat of mechanics just starting at level three because you know what your path is going forward. But hey, you have both versions, or both options there. It's Dungeons and Dragons. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah, and hopefully this will be, I'm hoping that they will have made a way for that to just be automated in D&D Beyond.
Yeah.
So like, if I pick the 2024 class and then I pick once I hit level three, I pick a 2014 subclass, it just does what it needs to do for me. They did hint at that there, it sounded like there was going to be some kind of overhaul with D&D Beyond when the player's handbook dropped.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I'm very interested in that. It makes sense because there's going to have to be a lot of back end work that's going to be done. They also did mention that 2024 stuff would override 2014 stuff. Now, I'm assuming that if you already own the 2014 stuff, there will be a way to use it. But I think it sounded like, as a baseline, that like Fireball, which exists in both, you're just going to get the 2024 Fireball.
Yeah.
Unless, I assume, you purposefully have to go manually grab like an older version of it or whatever. So that's what it sounded like. We'll have to see here in a few weeks once the early access drops, and I assume they'll do a big site update. So,
oh my gosh, it's so soon.
It's coming up very soon, and we'll have lots of thoughts when it drops, I'm sure.
Oh, definitely.
But one thing that won't be in the new player's handbook is the Artificer.
Wait, what? Are you saying that the most niche and not exactly as fantasy based as some of the other classes won't be in the player's handbook with all these new things?
Well, that's their excuse.
I know.
At least. Screen Rant had an interview with Jeremy Crawford about why is the Artificer not in the new player's handbook. And their excuse, and I'm going to call it an excuse, is Artificer in some ways didn't pass the task of being something universal to all D&D worlds, which I think is bullcrap, because they have freaking guns in like the player's handbook, and they've got space whales and solar ships and whatnot in the multiverse. It's a silly excuse. I understand at a theoretical level that you don't want to put too much stuff in it. Like, each of the, they apparently said each of the three books, the DMG, the Monster Manual, and the Player's Handbook, are 384 pages apiece.
Each.
They're the chunkiest, like, D&D trifecta book set that they've ever done. So I get it. Like, you've got printing limits and all sorts of stuff, and they probably had to cut some stuff already just to get down. to 384.
And I mean, the thing is if they put the Artificer in there, they would have had to add more stuff to the other two books so they'd be even again. So, you know, of course, you know, they can't come up with another 10 pages for the other books.
And they have to sell us another book. Let's be real.
Yeah.
I know. I see you, Wizards of the Coast marketing person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and they did say that it didn't, you know, go through any sort of review or anything this time. They say that it may appear in a future book coming out, which, you know, who knows, maybe it's going to be the first like supplemental, like Xanathar's or Tasha's or something book for 2024, where they're going to have like an update in there. Which, you know, I really hope so. But one of the big differences too, is if I remember correctly, the Artificer isn't actually part of the OLG.
No, not currently at least.
Yeah, so we'll see how that might play in coming forward.
As of right now, the Creative Commons is going to be like 5.1, and that should have all the new starter set stuff in it. Mm-hmm. But as of now, the Artificer is not migrated into the current Creative Commons. I'm hoping it will make it into the new 5.1 of the Creative Commons at some point. But they did say it will still be fully compatible with 2024, the current version that we have. And he did make it clear the Artificer will be officially reintroduced in the future, saying that there are fun new things in store for the Artificer. It just will not be in the player's handbook.
And hopefully they clear up how to actually play one a little bit more and, you know, work on that. This is how an Artificer works.
And my hope is, especially since they've streamlined the spell classes now into your like three different types of spells, mm-hmm. and they have the different categories for, you know, your marshals and your spellcasters and, you know, that type of thing. My hope is that we will see this next 10 years or whatever, we will see more actual classes. I think third parties have very much proved there is plenty of design space for brand new classes.
Definitely.
I'm hoping we see that.
Yeah, it'd be great. I mean, I don't have a lot of personal experience with Artificers. I've had one or two in some one shots that I've run. I don't fully know how they work. And when I did have one in my campaign, we both kind of looked at the rules and stuff and interpreted them slightly differently at times and had to kind of figure out some things and stuff. It's not as straightforward as a lot of the other classes. So them taking the time to put in the work for it is going to be great. If it's going to be in a future book, I love that. And it would be even better if there was another class or two included in that future book, whatever it may be.
Yeah. A book that is more class focused, I think would be,
great.
Be very awesome,
because I mean in fourth edition they had a ton of different like player handbook, like here's player's handbook 2 and 3, and they kept adding to it, you know, adding species and adding classes and everything. So I think that worked really well then, so hopefully they, of course, then again back then it wasn't like your main class and then a whole bunch of subclasses fitting in, everything was a class. So
yeah but I think at the end of the day I think there's still plenty of design space.
Oh, definitely.
For new classes.
Definitely.
Especially because in 5e, as cool as subclasses are, they are still decently limited with the changes that they actually make mm-hmm. to the main class. So definitely. I think that leaves room for a lot of actual classes as well. Moving on to the DMG, they started teasing some more stuff, and they let it be known that they actually consulted with several prominent DMs for the Dungeon Master's Guide, including Matt Mercer, including Deborah Ann Wall, including Alyssa Vischer, mm-hmm. who was on here, ended up talking to them a lot about just like the neurodivergence aspect of players and DMs and how to make the DMG more accessible, which is super cool. It's the whole thing has been really overhauled and doing like a show and tell type thing, which I think will make it a lot more useful. And as we said in the past, they have admitted many times that the DMG originally had the least amount of like work, love, art budget of all the books originally. Yeah. So this is kind of their redemption for the DMG. Even though it did have a lot of good stuff in it, it was not well organized.
Exactly. And I mean, this interview with Chris is absolutely fantastic. It kind of digs into some different things that we haven't seen yet, considering we've seen like 500 different interviews and features on the Player's Handbook, but just getting into the DMG is great. Talking about that a little bit, talking a little bit about the monster manual. And I am personally actually like I'm excited about the Player's Handbook coming out, obviously, but I am really just chomping at the bit to really take a look at that DMG and, you know, get more tips, get different things, like kind of see what they recommend compared to what I've been kind of doing on the fly for the past few years. And, you know, having things actually like make more sense than the current one is just a huge get. And I am just incredibly excited and very happy that that's coming soon as well.
Yeah, they also talked about, which one I thought was interesting. I consulted with Zach Clay, and he said Zach runs games for a lot of kids and teaches kids how to run games. So Zach was super keen to get him aboard because he could give us some perspective on whether our advice would resonate with younger DMs, which is super cool. And then I believe in one of the interviews, they even mentioned that they have one of the next products they have coming out is like another type of starter kit. Which they said is they feel like is one of their best yet in being able to just easily get people into learning how to play. So I'm very excited to see what they've got for that.
Yep. And considering that, like the Player's Handbook is focused a whole lot on, you know, introducing new players from talking about the game first before you even begin to start your character in level in chapter two, the DMG is really just so much more of a tool for becoming the Dungeon Master, learning how to play, learning how to run. And I mean, we've kind of talked about this before, but you know, with having an adventure in the DMG to kind of, you know, go step by step through and stuff, it really is a huge change. And this interview just kind of highlights that, as well as touches on the monster manual a tiny little bit.
Yeah. And speaking of the monster manual, we as part of Gen Con, we got one of our first looks at a stat block or the new monster manual in the adult or the ancient green dragon, I should say. And an example of what it is and how it's laid out. And so it's really kind of interesting. They've actually got the initiative listed now, which is cool. They broke down some of the saving throws to make it a little easier. It's obviously been buffed somewhat. You can definitely tell. And to make our monster fix ourselves much happier, it's actually way more interesting than the original Green Dragon. So, it's got some cool stuff that is based on like whether it's in its lair or not, which is cool. It's got its normal like multi-attack action, right? But then it's also got spell casting built in, which is super cool. So it's got like at will charm monster level 5, dissonant whispers level 4, detect magic, and then like a 2-a-day cloud kill level 8. And is it geese? I think it's the one where you can like control someone or modify a memory or something like that.
Geese.
You know what?
We're gonna pull up the handy dandy.
And then they've got he's got modify memory and polymorph on a 1-a-day as well. It's got the poison breath, and now all the legendary actions have been replaced with regular reactions. So it's different now. And they did this apparently to make it a little easier to understand, and to remember, because all the reactions, and the dragon can take up to 3 per round, but only 1 per turn. If the dragon is in its lair, it can take an additional 1. So this is another one of those extra things for being in the lair. But basically, the reactions have triggers to help the DM know when to use it or what they can use. So like Charming Presence, the trigger for that is another creature the dragon sees ends its turn. And then the dragon can cast Charm Monster. Corrosive Miasma, the trigger is the dragon uses its legendary resistance trait or is hit with a ranged attack. And in response, you can make them do a con save, and each creature in a 30-foot radius sphere centered on the point the dragon can see within 90 feet, it, you know, takes poison damage and has their AC reduced by 2. And then Rend Retaliation, which is basically if the dragon takes damage, you can make a rend attack back. So they've simplified the legendary actions and made it less ambiguous and giving you a little more direction on when you can use these things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And on D&D Beyond, they don't have Marisha Ray or Matt Mercer saying the spell name here. But I did a quick Google search, and it's Geesh. Yeah, so like Sean Geesh. Connery pronouncing the word Geesh.
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 Yes, I saw some geese over there. Anyways.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, I mean, God. So just that little bit being added to the ancient green dragon is pretty cool. But knowing that they did this to every monster that's in the monster manual has got me again, you know, I can't stop saying how excited I am for these new books, but the fact that like this level of just care went into a dragon means, okay, so what do they do to a gelatinous ooze? What are they doing to just a normal vampire? What are they doing to a bandit?
I love the fact that they built in spell casting. That's super cool. There's been a few other little drops of creatures, and I've seen several of them now have reactions, which is super cool. I know some people are disappointed that legendary resistance is still there in the old form that it was. Because I know there's some trains of thought where it's legendary resistance is just kind of a feel bad. I actually really liked how they did it in the MCDM Flea Mortals book, because they have those type of things, but there comes with like a downside or a power reduction or something, like the monster is using up this energy store. Yeah. Right. And so I really liked the way they did it, because it kind of still gives the players something. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So exactly. That's nifty. So I'm sure some people will just be like, I wish they would have fixed that. But that is something really cool you can flavor, or just from a monster fixer perspective, it's very easy to do really cool stuff. Like the green dragon uses the legendary resistance, but in doing so, it depleted some store of power, and its AC is now down by 2 for a turn or something like that. It's very easy to do that. And they have even added, and this was either a monster manual or a player's handbook thing they talked about. They added the bloodied condition back. That is actually listed as a condition now, which I believe, Ben, this was a 4E thing, which basically symbolized once you hit half health or something like that, you were bloodied, and sometimes you got extra abilities when that happened.
Yeah, like some of the things that come to mind, like a werewolf, if it gets bloodied, it goes into a rage at that point because, you know, took a lot of damage or smells the blood or something like that. Or, you know, if you're bloodied, other enemies can react based on that as well. At least that's how it was in fourth edition. We don't fully know what's going on with the 2024 yet. But, you know, again, just adding more things to combat and making things more interesting is so much better than just, I'm going to stand here and swing my sword 2 times.
Yeah. So just judging from this, it's looking like they did they moved the ball forward a decent bit, mm-hmm. especially compared to the original Monster Manual. And that's the kind of thing I want to see, especially with things like Flea Mortals coming out that really upped the game as far as monster creation goes. It looks like these will get a lot closer to that type of style, which is very exciting for me because that means less work for me to do. Mm-hmm. And I'll feel much better about running them as is, because they'll be fun for me to play and fun to play against for the players.
Yeah. And so we will have the stat block in our show notes, as with a lot of the links to the stuff that we're talking about. But one thing that when you are looking at it, just understand that this might not be the final text, because obviously the book's not out yet. So things still might be kind of changed or up in the air. But there's nothing that says you can't just steal the stat block right now and use it in your game.
Yeah. Yeah. And they said, and I don't know if it's actually included on the screenshot or not, they did say they're going to be building, I believe, layer actions into the stat block,
yeah.
because they used to basically be separate. And so sometimes people would have no idea they existed, mm-hmm. especially if you're looking on D&D Beyond and you just look up the straight stat block. It's just not right there in front of you.
Exactly. Yeah. So. It's not on this specific stat block, which is, when I read that, this is the first thing I did was open this up and I'm like, hey, wait a minute. But the fact that it's going to be added in there is just such a relief, because, you know, having multiple things open on a computer or remembering everything that's going on. Like, I think that at one point I had to make a homebrew layer action just to put into the order to remember to do it, because it's not listed anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. So having those built in will be nice for sure.
Definitely.
There's also a screenshot of a part of the redone DM screen, which does look really good. Kind of has conditions much better laid out, improvising damage, which is nice. Actions and what they can do. Jumping, concentration, damage severity, and level based off of character level, which is really cool. So I'm excited for the new DM screen. I assume if you get like the physical pack, you probably get a new DM screen with it.
I mean, you've got to, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I don't remember if it was mentioned, if it was included or not, but you would think so if you got the physical 3-pack. There's probably
I hope so.
Or it comes with the DMG. Or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But they did say, I believe, during one of the interviews, that it was redesigned even for like having a laptop in the middle of it or something like that. So I'm interested to see what that fully ends up looking like. But they've had 10 years, so hopefully it'll be useful, right?
Yeah. And I mean, it's got some interesting new stuff in there, like conditions. It's got a whole bunch of different stuff in there. Long jump, high jump, kind of, you know, giving more direction on jumping, which, like, who wants to look that up ever? But one of the things that I absolutely love here is the improvising damage. They have different examples. They also have like severity and level. Like, hey, if you're level 1 to 4, a nuisance would be like, you know, 5 damage or like 1d10, whereas something deadly could be 11 damage or 2d10, all the way up to like, you know, 17 to 20, 55 damage is a nuisance, 99 is deadly. You know, it's a good thing like that. And then they have just, you know, dice examples, which are great, going from like burned by coals, hit by falling bookcase, pricked by poison needles. That's like 1d10, going all the way down to 24d10, which is tumbling into a vortex of fire on the elemental plane of fire, crushed in the jaws of a godlike creature or a moon sized monster. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, it's good listing.
Yeah. 18d10 if you're interested. Those examples are submerged in lava or hit by a crashing flying fortress. And I mean, those things are funny, but they can happen in Dungeons and Dragons. So having a base of like, hey, this is kind of the threshold that you're looking for is actually surprisingly very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. The other big thing that they announced was Project Sigil.
Yes.
Or Sigil. however you prefer.
You know,
to pronounce it.
I can only assume that they're naming it after the city, right?
You'd think so.
I would hope so.
So whatever. So it is the code name basically for their new 3D virtual tabletop. They showed it off some at Gen Con. Basically, it looks like it has some like building tools, a character creator. You can import your character and have be able to see your character sheet from D&D Beyond. Mm-hmm. It has some spell effects, but it doesn't have necessarily animations because they said they're not trying to make it a video game, but they're trying to make it a space where you can kind of build stuff out and then play in it with your friends, your party. It sounded like there would be some amount of a free version. Mm-hmm. My guess is it will work very similarly to how D&D Beyond works, is where you have, if like the Dungeon Master has the subscription, it sounded like, and I don't know if we know for sure, but it sounded like it was going to be linked with your D&D Beyond subscription.
Yeah, the billing at least is kind of like that. From we talked a little bit about that before. But yeah, overall, you should be able to easily import, you know, any D&D Beyond maps, characters, monsters, stuff that you have. So it is going to be integrated, you know, very well with that, which I am thinking that that's really the best way that they can possibly go.
It's one of those things where it's like, I don't know if I will actually end up using it or not. Because at the end of the day, they said it's going to be an app. Mm-hmm. It's not going to exist within a web browser. It's going to be a separate app. It sounded like they'll have it available for mobile. So tablets, phones, PC, and then potentially eventually consoles. So I don't know how accessible this will be, especially to people with like not great high powered computers or tablets. And I don't know how playing on a phone would be that might be a little small. I hope they really continue to invest in their 2D tabletop that is like fully integrated with D&D Beyond, because that is actually really good and has been getting better and helpful. I'm sure this will appeal to a certain demographic, especially those who only play online. It could be very useful for something like that, especially if the tools are very good, especially if it's integrated into the D&D Beyond subscription.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we don't know what the rest of the monetization is going to be like. Like, if you have the D&D Beyond subscription and you buy the digital copy of the book, do you get all the digital assets that are from that book? We don't know. Or is it going to be another thing that you have to buy separately? And that's a question I do not think that's been answered yet. And we're probably going to find out more as the beta happens, which if you have a subscription to D&D Beyond, you can now sign up for the beta test that's coming this fall.
Yeah, anyone with a D&D Beyond account can sign up for the closed beta. That's this fall. You'll receive an activation code via email plus 5 additional codes for your party members.
Which is cool. I mean, that makes a lot of sense, right? If you can get your DM signed up and you want to test it out, that works great. But there's still a lot that we don't know about, like the monetization aspect and stuff. And that kind of ties into a job posting, which we do need to mention. Mm-hmm. That just came out, where Wizards basically posted a job posting for a monetization designer for D&D. And that sounds super scary, which we won't downplay it. It's kind of crap because this is a very common position in video games, especially live service games. Mm-hmm. D&D obviously has a big digital presence, and especially with this new virtual tabletop coming, there is potential for buying digital assets for the tabletop, right? Like I said, we don't know, does getting a digital copy on D&D Beyond get you the assets in the VTT? if you're subscribed, does being subscribed get you the assets while you are subscribed? Like, we don't know any of this, because I think if I buy a physical copy and a digital copy, and then I have to buy all the assets on top of that, I don't think that's going to fly. And I don't think a lot of people will do that.
So
I think that'd be a really hard sell.
I'm going to partially play devil's advocate here. So let's say you don't have access to a 3D printer, but you like using miniatures. I'm buying the books, whether it's digitally so you can use it on D&D Beyond or not, physical versions of the books. I'm also buying miniatures. So I'm not saying it's a one-to-one, because definitely one of them's digital and it's just code. So definitely it should not be the same amount. But Wizards is officially putting out blind boxes for a lot of their monsters for when a new book comes out. So in a sense, they kind of already have some sort of monetization there as well. It's just not digital. On top of that, ever since the beginning of Dungeons & Dragons, they had to find a way to monetize it more. Because you buy the rule set, that's technically all you will ever need to play Dungeons & Dragons, except for some dice, but they don't sell dice. Although they sell digital dice, so I guess in this case they do. But that's why, like I read in that book, that's why they created a magazine that would have more supplemental information. That's why they would have modules made. That's why they would, you know, have new rules for new things and stuff. So Dungeons and Dragons has always been about continually monetizing what it is. This is going forward into, okay, well now it's a digital table, just like you would have on another, you know, just a regular physical table. I don't know how much is going to be monetized. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's going to be, you know, hey, you bought the digital book, here's all the assets, but here's a different version of that green dragon model that you already have. It looks cool. It's in a different pose. Maybe you want a different skin for it instead. Because if you remember when they announced the, you know, pre-order the bundle with the books and the digital versions and everything like that for the 2024 handbooks, if you do that, you get a golden dragon. But yep. Is that just a golden dragon skin so that you have a special skin for it? Or is that the only way that you're going to ever be able to get a golden dragon aside from buying it again or something like that? You're right. We don't know some of these things. The fact that
I'm sure some of them will be worked out to an extent in the beta.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's one of those things where they're going to be, you know, asking, seeing what works, what doesn't, and all that. But the fact that they're adding the monetization designer into it means that maybe they just need someone with experience with a digital content versus physical content. Who knows? We don't know exactly what that position is compared to what it would be in like EA, which we know in EA, it's get every single penny out of our customers and then some. We don't know. Hasbro, Wizards of the Coast, everything, they're still a company. At the end of the day, they're in this to make money. Yes, there are passionate people who are in it to, you know, make the best gaming experience because they love it just as much as we do. So hopefully that there's good intentions here. I hope so. But again, knowing that this is a virtual tabletop, they're already selling physical versions of all the stuff. To me, it's not that much different unless they like really price gouge you.
Yeah. And honestly, I'm probably not the target audience for this.
Yeah, I totally am. Like,
and 100%. You are, because you are 100% online.
Yeah, that's all we do is play online because we have someone who's out of state and we don't have the best way to, you know, sit at a table and bring in an out of state person. You know, we're not going to get one of those like iPad robots or something.
So if they do a good job of making the tools very accessible for mm-hmm. either building or having pre-made stuff, if it's for like a module, comes out and all the big set pieces are pre-built for you.
Yeah. This is perfect for me. Perfect.
That's exact. Yeah. That would be actually pretty cool, because then especially if it has deep integration with D&D Beyond, mm-hmm. that could then give you a very in-person tabletop like feeling, even if you're all online.
Yeah. Now, we were going to talk about this in community, but or in our community content and stuff, but I'm just going to throw it in here just because it's really fitting. So there was a, you know, the D&D live at Gen Con, which I recommend watching it anyway, because it was absolutely fantastic. But they did use sigil, whatever you want to call it, for their combat on stage. And it is literally not a video game. You don't see the, you know, the characters walk around. You don't see them. You physically pick up the digital token and move it and then set it down where you want it and stuff. I'm assuming because they didn't show like they had one screen overall. So they didn't show like, hey, this is my perspective. This is their perspective or whatever. So we didn't see like, oh, if you pick them up, then they just have like a circle around them for how far they can move or something like that. They didn't show a lot of that kind of inner working stuff, but combat is literally one little token just kind of like shakes and smacks the other one. You know, it's not like I'm swinging my sword at you. Spell effects were very basic. It was like, hey, I'm doing a fireball or something like that. It's just, you know, just little bits. So while it's still using like a lot of the same assets from like Baldur's Gate 3, it is very much not Baldur's Gate 3. But again, we'll have a link to the in the show notes to that video. I again recommend watching it. It's a ton of fun. But being able to kind of see it in use is one of the reasons why I am just so excited and like looking forward to this beta to get in, to really give some feedback to say what works, what doesn't. And I'm going to get the perfect number of codes because I have five players. So it's me, five players. And it's perfect for me.
And to be fair, it gives another option to play.
Yeah.
And exactly. That's not a bad thing.
And it's not a bad thing. A whole lot less work than going into Foundry or something else where you have to input everything in and, you know, set up lighting effects. And like, it's going to be so integrated that it's going to make it just that much easier for me and so much less prep than having to create like, you know, tons of maps and stuff. So I cannot wait for this to drop, and I hope that it works on all of my players' PCs.
That's the big thing.
I know, right? It's like,
that's the big thing. Hopefully they kept this very light from a system requirement standpoint. So we will see.
Yeah,
we will definitely have impressions of that when the beta goes live, because both of us are signed up. So we will be certain to check that out.
Exactly.
So that is the news. Hopefully it will slow down a little bit. But I know the DMG is right around the corner. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, exactly.
But let's jump into
see what you did there.
Chase scenes. So these are really cool. There's not a whole lot of guidance on how to do these in any official capacity. Chase scenes are really interesting because normally they take place ad hoc or as like the beginning or the ending of like a combat type session. Although sometimes, you know, it can happen in the middle of combat. So I've actually had people ask me, you know, Ryan, how do you run a chase scene well and make it interesting?
Well, let me put it this way. Ryan, how do you run a chase scene well and make it interesting?
That's a great question, Ben.
Oh, thank you.
So I prefer theater of the mind for all my chase scenes, because I find that especially as long as you as the DM can do a decent job describing things, I find the players are much more creative when a chase scene is played out a little more loosely in theater of the mind versus trying to grid it or, you know, fully just measure out exactly what's going on a piece of paper or 30 feet, you know, dash action, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. To start, I usually try and describe the area, but I want to let my players know that they can ask questions. So let's say the chase scene is running through a town. I describe running down the main thoroughfare. There are buildings on the left and right side. There are alleyways. There are market stalls set up along this thoroughfare. There are some people moving back and forth. So that's kind of sets the stage. They are chasing down this villain. For the most part, or at least in a lot of chase scenes, you can assume that the players and whoever they're chasing are roughly the same speed. If you're not, and they're faster for some reason, let them know, because then it becomes less, you need to figure out how are we going to slow them down first before we even catch them.
Yeah.
Whereas otherwise it becomes, how do we catch them? So what I usually do is I do like a rough initiative where basically they get to do something, then the person they're chasing does something. This could be allowing use of like any of their spells. It's just like, I want to try and shoot something to knock down some barrels to get in this guy's way to slow him down. Right. And so then as a DM, I go, okay, cool. Make an attack roll. And this is where some of those like pre-built in AC type things come to play. It's a barrel. It's a 10. Right. So if you can hit a 10, you can knock the barrel over and then they have to make a dex save. Right. Mm-hmm. To try and avoid it, or you get one step closer. And then as a DM, I go, okay, maybe they have to do three things to catch up with this guy. But he's also doing things to try and up that number while they're doing things to try and lower that number. Right. And then they can get creative. I want my players to constantly be able to ask me, Is this here? Can I try this? Is there a way to get up on the rooftop so I can get high? Is there, you know, a big, you know, stack of barrels in coming up? Is this door open to this house so that I can get a better vantage point? All those types of things. You want to keep it loose. You want to keep it open enough that the players can imagine and ask questions, and then you as the DM can go yes or no, but to their different inquiries to try and chase down this particular villain. So that's how I usually like to try and run them. It's the same kind of deal if for like natural disaster scenarios, like an earthquake or a collapsing building. Mm-hmm. Or something like that, where I like to just shift back to theater of the mind, go a little more loose on initiative and movement, and make it more about the surroundings, what the player is doing, or what the player can ask about to try and be creative to survive a situation, get out of a situation, catch a bad guy, etc.
Yeah. So from the very beginning, I think the biggest thing that you need to know is, what is the actual goal? You know, are they trying to catch? Are they trying to escape? From there, you can really kind of play out how it works out. Environment, of course, is going to be something very important. If you're in a wagon chasing after someone on like a road or something like that, obviously you're going to have a lot more kind of freedom of movement and things, because you know, you're not going to be in like a confined street. On top of that too, you know, just kind of get an idea of, okay, we're going to have maybe like a, kind of like I did with the ship, where it's like, okay, here's the ship's turn. Here's the player's turn, you know, keep that separate. So that if say your entire party is in like a coach of some point, you know, maybe the ranger is going to be shooting arrows out of the back while the person driving is going to be, you know, trying to egg on the horses to go faster, or the druid drops down hallucinatory terrain or something. I mean, there's a lot of different things that can kind of happen and play into all that. But I think the big thing is that you said it, you know, right at the end there, where you say yes or no, but, and I think that is probably the most important thing, because you don't want this to be NASCAR where you're just on the road turning left a whole bunch. You know, give them options, give them things to do. let them fill in the environment a lot, like you were kind of saying. You know, it's if you know, we're going through our forest scenario, maybe a downed tree so that they have to, you know, if you're riding horseback, you have to jump over it, make some rolls for that, or go around. Maybe you're hitting or running into like a bog, or there's a river they need to cross or something like that. And on top of that too, if your players are chasing someone else, give them chances to actually stop the person, you know, otherwise it's just railroady of, oh, they got away. You know, and that's just, it doesn't feel good. You want to give them those opportunities. And, you know, as with everything in D&D, if they succeed or fail, it should be on the players, not you. So if they succeed, hey, you know what? It might alter your plans, but they had a really cool chase scene and won. Or if they got away, it may also alter your plans. But again, you had a very cool chase scene and they got away. So there's,
yeah, you're not always going to win.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what you really need to focus on, is the motivations, the, what, you know, whoever is chasing or being chased is doing, and let your players just fill in a lot of that.
Yeah. Cause remember, whoever's being chased has access to a lot of the same tools, mm-hmm. as far as, especially as far as environmental stuff goes. So as a DM, be creative with that as well.
Yeah, in fact,
because that can make things way more interesting for your players, so they have to overcome more challenges than just creating challenges for the person or entity that they're chasing.
And it always has that very good possibility that the enemy that they're chasing or being chased or whatever will shoot themselves in a foot by doing something, giving the players inspiration to try something or to alter what they're doing. And, you know, there's a lot of give and take in there, unless they're chasing or being chased by a tabaxi monk, and then it's just over because they can move 600 feet in one turn. So just be careful with that.
Yeah. And I mean, the same thing goes for like any chase, like even in vehicles, mm-hmm. and stuff, right?
Yeah.
One of the things I recommend people watching that is a really well done chase scene is I believe it is the first season, a few episodes in, of Fantasy High.
Yeah, yeah.
On Dimension 20. There is a phenomenally well done chase scene in that episode. And if you're looking in, even though it's done with miniatures, it's still done in a fairly like loosey-goosey type way, a little more. So I highly recommend watching that for some inspiration, because that is certainly a really cool example of one.
Yeah. And then on top of that too, if you're looking for a really kind of crazy chase sort of thing, on Critical Role, if I remember correctly, Sam Riegel DM'd, what was it, Crash Pandas or something like that? It was all about, I mean, it was a crazy little game, but there were some really cool, funky mechanics in there that you can kind of take and put into D&D as well, that were just, it's stupid. It's all stupid. Anything Sam does is just the weirdest, craziest stuff, but it looked like it was a ton of fun. Check that out too. But you're right. Fantasy High is probably one of the quintessential chase scenes. Like you said, a couple episodes in, it was just perfect the way that it worked. And Brennan, as always, is a very yes and sort of DM, so seeing it in a chase setting is very inspirational. I highly recommend it. That's a very good call out.
Yeah, the more creative the better, for sure. What about you? Have you guys had or run some cool chase scenes? We would love to hear about it. Because there's a lot of different ways to go about doing that. So we'd love to hear from that. Make sure to hit us up on Discord or in our email that we'll have at the end of the show. We'd love to hear those stories.
Yes, always.
Okay, so as we kind of wrap up, a lot of what we've talked about obviously will be linked in the show notes, but we did want to shout out a few things specifically. The first one is a video done by Ginny D She's amazing. We love her stuff. It's entitled "Should I Switch to D&D 2024?" And she does a very balanced interview with Jeremy Crawford, asking about some of the stuff and then interspersing it with her own thoughts and comments, which I really, really liked. So we'll have the link to that. And then also Bell of Lost Souls has a beginning like review roundup of the 2024 Player's Handbook. If you want to start going and checking out more of those, if you're still on the fence about whether you want to switch over or not, we'll have the link to that as well.
Yep. Oh boy. We're at the tail end of the Player's Handbook stuff until it fully comes out, we might have more, but a lot of what's been coming out is kind of like repeats of the same information and stuff. So at least from our end, it's starting to die down on what we're going to use our reporter fedoras for. So I'm looking forward to starting to dig into the DMG and the Monster Manual.
Yeah, which we should start seeing that hopefully in the next month or two. I know for me specifically, I've already talked about it with my players. We are going to fully switch over to the 2024. I will certainly give kind of a recap once we do that, because all of our stuff is based in D&D Beyond. So I'll kind of give like a little overview, a little review of how it went, how easy it was to do via D&D Beyond. If we hit any snags. So definitely look forward to that for those who are on the fence or wondering how hard it'll be to convert, because we're going to try and just convert wholesale. So we'll probably actually take like one of our sessions or at least like half of one of our sessions and sit down and fully just help walk through the new stuff and help convert all the player characters over.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like I said, we're not going to go 100% unless everybody wants to. I'm going to give everybody the option to do it.
And you're definitely a lot further in than my campaign, that's true. Which is only at level 5 currently.
Yeah,
it should be a little bit easier of a swap over.
Yeah, 13 or 14 or so.
So that's definitely a probably a bit more of a commitment and a swap over than earlier campaign like I am right now.
Yeah, we do have a couple of the subclasses in my campaign right now as well. So that I think is going to be a big part of who wants to switch and who doesn't. So we'll see how it goes. And also even more so, see if my paladin wants to switch over to the new paladin rules.
Yeah.
I really hope so, because I hate it when she could just destroy any character in one turn.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be rough. I know a lot of my players are pretty excited for weapon mastery.
Yeah.
So that'll be a big boon for some of them, for sure.
I don't have a lot of like martial classes, so it's not going to be too big, but for me it'll be a huge change. So I'm looking forward to that, because
it's a DM, you can use it.
Cuz guess what? This other group that they've been kind of, sparring with here or there, they're all getting changed to 2024 because I'm the DM and I say so.
That's right. That's right. And speaking of that, have you played since the last time we talked?
No, unfortunately I haven't. We normally play every other week, and we would have been, it would be this Saturday, but it's actually the weekend after a very important anniversary date with myself and Nevermore. So we are going to be doing it the week after.
Cool, cool. Well, that'll be exciting. I'm excited to hear what the high seas have to bring.
Yeah, and I told you offline about the plans that I have for later on, and I'm starting to work on that stuff, and I've already made a new stat block for it, and hoo boy, we'll see how that goes.
Very exciting.
How about you, though? Have you been able to play?
I have. Had a session last Friday. It was a kind of a come down session after the giant finale battle arc thing that we had, they rescued. Needed. Yeah, they rescued a lot of the hostages. Some of them barely made it out alive. it was kind of a get people safe, kind of take a little bit of a breather, figure out what happened while they were gone. So it was kind of a like the little intermission type thing. And then our next session that's coming up will be a full on downtime session. About a day and a half of downtime. So the players are figuring out now what they want to do with that day and a half before this big party charity dinner, of which there's intrigue going on. There's very high and powerful people there. They've made some interesting discoveries about a high ranking official that is at least part of this huge conspiracy of capturing these people and summoning these demons. And so it's going to be interesting to see how these characters have lives in this city.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're not adventurers. They are living in this city. And so they have lives. They have things they need to do. They have stuff they have to take care of. So it'll be really fun to run through that in the next session for that day and a half or so before we jump into this kind of social party type situation that they'll have to navigate and just do some RP. And this is a very strong RP group, so I'm very excited to see what all they end up doing.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to that. And I don't know why, but that gave me an idea for my Spelljammer campaign for later on that I'll tell you about offline, and I think could be fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, you know, you and I have said it before. Inspiration just kind of pops up anywhere when it comes to being a DM.
Yep.
You know, whether it's I'm in the shower and brainstorming about random stuff, which I get my best ideas there, which is really weird, I know. Or on top of that, it's like I'll just be driving around, or I'll see like a random meme or picture of something and it'll just spark something. Like or someone will say something really weird. Remind me to tell you about a near deer at some point that I come up with. I haven't made a stat block for it, but I've come up with it and it's terrifying. So inspiration comes from anywhere. Sometimes it's just you hear a story and then it just lights that spark.
And like we said, try and find yourself a DM friend who does not play in your game so that you can bounce ideas off each other, so that you can get inspiration from each other and learn from each other. It is a wonderful thing, and we highly recommend.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
But I think for now, that will wrap up our show. So, Ben, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached and where they can find all the links to the things that we talked about today?
Oh my gosh, all the links. You can find those at dndiscussions.com. We will have links to everything that, well, we have a link for, which is quite numerous this week, as has been the last few weeks, actually. So make sure to go to dndiscussions.com. From there, you can also find all of our social media stuff, which is actually going to be Blue Sky. That's where we do social media because it's a place we feel safe and comfortable. You can find the show at DN Discussions. Ryan is at TBK Zord. I am at Ben Bumhofer. You will also find a link to our Discord server there, which, you know what? Sometimes discussions are hopping. So definitely join in. Come along for the ride because heaven knows I'm having a lot of fun just seeing what everybody has to say, throwing in my two cents here and there and having fun. So definitely check that out. Of course, if you have any other questions, you don't feel like, you know, kind of posting anywhere that anybody can see, you can always email us. You can send those to dndiscussions@gmail.com. We love to hear from you, and we would absolutely love to hear about any chases that you've done. And if you have any tips or hints or anything like that as well, definitely check that out. And then, of course, hey, wherever you listen to this, you can hear every other episode of DN Discussions that has ever come out, which is 116 other ones. Or of course you can go to dndiscussions.com to listen to it there. While you are on your podcast player of choice, hey, feel free to leave us a review. It only helps us in the long run. So check that out. Click a 5-star. We love that. 4-star. We like that as well. Anything other than that though, forget I said anything. So anyways, help us out with that. If you want to hear me play some Dungeons and Dragons, definitely check out Plus Five to Hit. We are definitely in the tail end of the Frost Rhyme, or a Rhyme of the Frost Maiden, and gosh, crazy stuff is happening.
Good old Frost Rhyme.
I know. I'm just like, oh, what's going on there? But yeah, it's crazy stuff's happening. The group I play with in that, we are having a ton of fun. We want Ryan back so bad. Maybe one day, at least, you know, so we can at least figure out what your character is up to. But anyways, that being said, check out Plus Five to Hit. And with that, Ryan, this journey has been amazing. I am looking forward to chasing down some more leads and, you know, maybe adding our sigil to a sigil somewhere. I don't know, whatever. Not as good as I thought it would sound. Anyways, so everybody, thanks for listening. We appreciate all of your support. And until next time, make sure to roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.